There never seems to be a dull moment when it comes to Minnesota sports, whether it's on the gridiron.
In the end zone is a Minnesota touchdown.
On the court.
Title number four for the Minnesota Lynx dynasty.
On the ice.
With a shot, he scores.
Or on the diamond.
Safe at the plate, and the Twins have just scored twice.
There's always something to chat about.
Whatever people think about that and however they value that, let it be.
If you're looking for fun, informal discussion on all things Minnesota sports, you've found it right here. Presenting Minnesota Sports Chat. And now, your host, Ross Brendel.
Welcome inside another edition of Minnesota Sports Chat. Again, the soon-to-be award-winning Minnesota Sports Chat, if only in my own mind. Thank you for finding this pod. It is available on Apple, Spotify, and now iHeart. Very happy to have iHeart in the fold. I'll get the begging out of the way, and I'll get the introductions out of the way. As that open says, I would be Ross Brendel. Very happy that you continue to join me on this venture. That's the introduction, the begging part. If you can, please hit pause, or maybe at the end of this episode, if you can rate it, review it, share it with friends, do whatever you can to spread the word, I would certainly appreciate that. Well, a couple guests today, and I'm really looking forward to it. We'll call it New Friends. New Friends edition, but also I just wanted to make sure we talked a little bit of Lynx basketball. I said from day one we'll talk Minnesota Lynx basketball. Heck, we'll cover all the teams in town, and we've pretty much already done that, even doing a deep dive on the St. Paul Saints and the American Association early on. But when I mention new friend, I think I can call you a new friend. Mitchell Hansen, he covers the Minnesota Lynx and the Timberwolves for Zone Coverage. You can follow Mitchell on Twitter. He is at M_Hansen with an E, 13. Again, M_Hansen13 with an E. And of course, you can follow Zone Coverage at Zone Coverage MN if you haven't done that. Hello, new friend, Mr. Hansen. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. And I appreciate you pushing out the Twitter handle. And I always tell people, everybody always mixes up Hansen with O-N or E-N. So I always say, when they ask me if it's E-N or O-N, I always say E-N the correct way, the only way. So I appreciate you you pushing that out for me. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to join you.
I think what's great about that is your E-N and O-N with Hansen reminds me an awful lot. My father's name is Jeffrey, and he spells Jeff, J-E-F-F. So if anybody ever asks him, he says the exact same thing, Mitchell. He says the correct way, J-E-F-F. So if you spell it G,
the only way, right?
Yeah, if you spell it G-E-O-F-F, that's fine. He's just going to tell you it's not the correct way. But again, thanks for joining me. And I really do want to spend, we'll touch on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Obviously, they're still one of the most popular teams in town, one that a lot of people pay attention to. But I do want to give the Minnesota Lynx their due credit. Their season gets underway this upcoming weekend. I believe it is Sunday, where they'll take on Connecticut in the WNBA bubble at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Gopher fans, I've mentioned before, very familiar with IMG Academy because a lot of football players have come through there. The WNBA, still a 12-team league, and right now I was scanning. I'm not a big bettor, Mitchell, but I do love to kind of just look and see where Vegas has the various teams at, especially when it comes to Minnesota. Right now, the Lynx averaging kind of in that top-bottom half, somewhere between 7th and 9th is what I've seen most when it comes to their odds of winning the WNBA Finals in the bubble city of Bradenton, Florida at IMG Academy. Is that in line with what you're thinking? Does that seem fair to you to be somewhere in the, I guess we'll call it top of the bottom half when it comes to odds here out of the gate to win the WNBA Finals?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say it's great to be talking basketball. It's great to be talking sports in general, and the fact that they're returning this weekend is definitely an exciting thing for sports fans everywhere. But touching on the odds a little bit, I would put them kind of in that same area. For the biggest reason is obviously you're going to have the uncertainty of how a neutral site's going to impact everybody. So that, going in right away, that's going to be kind of one of the big question marks, because you could have a team that you know, is so dominant at home, and that, you know, that obviously results in them having a better record at the end of any given year. But this year, kind of everybody's on an even slate. But when it comes specifically to the Lynx, you know, they have a lot of new faces, a little bit of uncertainty yet. You know, they've had a lot of changing pieces within this team. Obviously, they still have Nafisa Collier and Sylvia Falls, just to name a few. But, you know, they're going to look very different at the guard positions, you know, until, you know, there's question marks surrounding Odyssey Sims, when she'll be able to come back, if she'll be able to come back at all this year after giving birth to her child during the off season. You know, and she played a big role as well. So they're in the team last year in her first year in Minnesota. So there are a lot of question marks for this team. And I mean, if you look at the team from 2019, obviously they finished seventh. They were kind of floating around the 6-7 spot with Seattle and a few other teams towards the end of the year. So yeah, I, when you look at the 2020 year, it's going to be weird on a multiple or for multiple different reasons, but you know, right out of the gate, I would, and this obviously could change early on, but right out of the gate, I would put Minnesota around that seven, in between 7 to 9, you know, when it comes to specifically betting odds, but as well in the standings.
Cheryl Reeve mentioned going into the offseason and through the offseason when it comes to acquiring players, whether it be via the draft, free agency, trades, one of the things that she wanted to do the most is upgrade the shooting of the team. While their number one overall selection, Mekia Herbert-Harrigan, she was their first overall pick, sixth overall in this past summer's draft. Mitchell, honestly, I'd be lying if I told you I could really break down her game, but I have seen her play a few times just watching a lot of sports and a lot of college basketball. I do know, too, from the moment she was drafted, there's a lot of people that thought the Lynx may have found another franchise player. So if they did indeed do that, kudos to them. But it would be a little interesting if they did find a franchise player with the sixth overall pick. That to me, maybe some of that's hyperbole, but I don't think we will really know until she gets into the fold. But what are realistic expectations for her? And what can the realistic expectations for the team be this upcoming season?
Yeah, just a little bit of a kind of a background or kind of a profile on her. You know, she's kind of a long, lengthy forward that can stretch the floor. She can, you know, be a nice, you know, defending piece. She's kind of that Cheryl Reeve type defender. She's nitty gritty. She's, you know, they give her the nickname of Mad Kiki. So, her nickname is Kiki Herbert Harrigan, which kind of makes it a little bit easier to pronounce to some extent, but because I know a lot of people kind of fumble up her first name. But you know she's kind of a type of player that'll just kind of put her head down and go to work, and that's the type of player that Cheryl Reeve loves. You know, she mentioned in the past that you know, with having Clinette Pearson and Rebecca Brunson on her assistant coaching staff, that's going to help a ton with her development. And she's kind of a player that they see has a lot of upside and a lot of potential. That's something Cheryl Reeve has said a lot about since the draft. They thought that her ceiling could potentially be very high. And, you know, coming in, she's going to, you know, obviously the Lynx had the sixth pick last year, and that resulted in a piece of Collier who ended up winning Rookie of the Year. So I think that's not obviously a very, you know, good comparison to have to go into. And I don't know if she'll, you know, necessarily be compared to that extent, you know, coming in, even though they were the same pick. But, you know, she's somebody that I don't know how big of an impact she'll have right out of the gate. You know, just given the layout of this team, and they do have some pieces within that post rotation that, you know, maybe she'll fall a little bit lower on that depth chart in that rotation. But, you know, she's somebody that could develop into a really solid piece. She obviously, you know, comes from a solid program in college, and, you know, definitely has the potential. So, you know, when it comes to upside with her, like I said, Reeve and the rest of her coaching staff, they did their homework on her going in, although it was kind of a, you know, to some extent, a little bit of a surprising pick. People thought maybe, you know, they would go elsewhere and address more of that shooting need through the draft instead of going with a post. But, You know, I'm excited to see what Herbert Harrigan can do on the court and what she can develop into being. And I think she'll kind of end up being, you know, with the tutelage of the, say, Rebecca Brunson or Matt Pearson on that coaching staff. I think she could be that type of player down the road. But it'll be interesting to see how she adjusts here in her first year.
One of the things you brought up, which I think is an interesting point, not just for the WNBA, but I think it's interesting for the NBA with their season resuming and the NHL and even the MLS, who's doing their MLS's back tournament in a hub city. And then whether they get going or not, I guess, is anybody's guess when they try and resume their regular season game in stadiums. But the point that you brought up about this year just being so interesting because everybody's in one location, who knows what that's going to look like? Are the best teams still going to be the perceived best teams still going to be the best teams in the end? What happens, and we've said this again in really in all leagues, what happens if a team is inflicted with COVID more than another team? But when you look at the Minnesota Lynx, is it conceivable that this roster, let's just assume health across the league, even though it sounds like you generally agree with the Vegas of being somewhere between 7th and 9th, the Vegas, how old did I just sound there? Agreeing with Vegas of being between 7th and 9th with the odds, is it possible this team could put things together and maybe make a run? Is that realistic to think that, or is this more of still an in-between year?
Coming into the year, I think it's still more so a kind of an in-between year just because they are a younger team. They're still trying to fully, you know, get their identity under their belts. You know, if they had, you know, not saying there's nothing against the guards that they have on the roster right now, but if they had, a solid kind of building block at guard, I would say that maybe they would take a little bit of a step forward this year. But it certainly could happen. I'm not saying that they'll do worse than last year or they're going to have, you know, put together a bad season. Just because, like you said, there is kind of an unknown of what's going to take place when you get down to IMG Academy or when games do start down there, because everybody is on an even slate. You're going to have no fans. You obviously don't have the home court advantage. You're not playing in tough road environments. Some players are sitting out, whether that be, you know, Elena Deladon with the Washington Mystics, Tina Charles with the Mystics, their big offseason acquisition from the Liberty. She's now sitting out as well for health concerns. There are some big name players that are out too. So, it's interesting to see kind of the layout of the league, especially looking at it from last year to this year. It's kind of hard to tell. Not a ton of movement really took place. There was some movement throughout the offseason as far as players switching from team to team, which changes things a bit. But there's just a lot of uncertainty as far as how the neutral site will play into everything and how players are going to adjust. I mean, you look at even the MLB getting started and just with inter-squad games, you know, the players and coaches were talking about how weird it is to you have the pumped in crowd noise, but you don't have any fans. You can't feed off the fans. And, you know, you'd think the WNBA kind of does the same where they have some sort of, the WNBA and NBA will have some sort of piped in noise. I mean, I know some of the players even came out and said they hope that there is some sort of noise, but how do you, is there going to be an advantage for the home team rather than the away team? How is that going to play into things, and how are the players going to adjust? So, right out of the gate, I think the biggest key for Minnesota and the rest of the teams is to try and get off to a hot start. Obviously, that's a given in any other year, but get off to a hot start because, you know, teams are going to try and basically try everything they can to get rolling right away. And there might be an adjustment period. So it might take, you know, and especially with the shortened season, with it being 22 games rather than, you know, 36, what it was supposed to be this year. It'll be important this year more than ever to get off to a fast start and kind of jump out in front of everybody. And, because people are going to adjust to the neutral site at some point in the new schedule this year. So it'll be interesting to see. It's definitely for every sport in the sports world in general. It's a crazy year, and it's going to be a year like we've never seen before. But it'll be interesting to see how the links adjust to that for sure.
Yeah, and if these leagues can successfully pull off finishing each of their resumptions or their seasons, I do think that could be a very good needed distraction for the country and even the world. As we know, a lot of the world follows the major sports here in the United States. You brought up just a fascinating topic, or at least you hinted at it, that I want to expound on just a little bit. How, in your opinion, if you're the WNBA or Major League Baseball, and those are probably the two that would be affected by it the most, because the NHL is basically starting with their qualifying round and then the playoffs. The NBA only brought back the teams that are in the mix and the playoff teams. But if you're the WNBA and you're Major League Baseball, is there any way you can avoid the checkout factor? Because I really do think even in Major League Baseball, Mitchell, let's just say it. Heck, let's just say it's the Twins. If the Twins get off to a 3-7 start or 4-8, don't you think it becomes a little bit easier for a Jose Barrios or even Eddie Rosario or somebody to say, oh boy, I don't know, we're already 5 games out of first place. I had reservations about being here. Maybe they're not giving it 100%, or maybe they just up and leave. And I'm not saying Eddie Rosario is going to do that, but I think it's only human nature to think that this could happen with teams in the WNBA and Major League Baseball that get off to slow starts. Is there a way to avoid that, or is it just kind of the elephant in the room that we all know exists and we're going to have to cross it when we get there?
I actually think, you know, when it comes to specifically Minnesota, I think they're, you know, this year they're kind of more so positioned in a way that won't happen. Obviously, Cheryl Reeve and her coaching staff, they always do a great job of keeping the team focused and, you know, keeping them kind of laser focused on the task at hand and the next game ahead. But with this, specifically with this 2020 Lynx team, you know, they are a little bit of a younger team. So that, you know, a lot of those younger players are trying to come in, they're trying to prove themselves. And a lot of the players that came in over the offseason, you know, that the Lynx did sign, they're trying to, you know, have bounce back years. They're trying to prove themselves. Karima Christmas Kelly, who was on the team last year, she was out for most of the year with an injury. She's trying to come back and kind of have a prove it year. You know, Crystal Dangerfield, you know, Herbert Harrigan, they're both incoming rookies. They're trying to kind of carve out a spot. You have Rachel Banham, who the team signed or traded for this off season. You know, she's trying to kind of create that big starting role for her spot or herself, or a big role within this rotation for kind of the first time in her career. So, you know, when it comes to specifically the Lynx, I can't speak for the rest of the league. It'll be interesting to see how they take that, especially if they fall behind early on. But when it comes to the Lynx, I think that, you know, they won't have an issue with that this year, just because, you know, for two factors, just, you know, with Cheryl Reeve and the fact that she's always keeping them on their toes and kind of keeping them focused on what they need to try and accomplish, because they do have big goals yet this year to try and get back to the playoffs for a 10th straight season. But, you know, with this team, it's a little bit of a younger team, and they're trying to come back and prove themselves. And I think that'll play into Minnesota's favor, whether or not they have a good record or not. I think that they'll be engaged and they'll be ready to go throughout the whole season.
Mitchell, you wrote just a fantastic piece, and I truly mean that. I read it this morning basically twice. I went through it and read it, and then I took deeper notes going through it a second time. But I want to have you break down to the best of your abilities. I still think there's a lot we don't know. But just exactly how did Simone Augustus end up with LA? And I don't necessarily care that it's LA. It just seems incredibly odd that she's not 99% sure going to finish her career with the Minnesota Lynx. It just seems incredibly odd that between her and her camp and Cheryl Reeve and the Minnesota Lynx that they couldn't figure this out, or by the time they started getting to the point where maybe it was getting a little unamicable and maybe not as peaceful as everybody would have hoped, that they couldn't mend the fences because of all that they've accomplished together. Just exactly how did we get to this point, and what do we actually know? And I want to give you the chance to plug your piece for Zone Coverage.
Thanks for mentioning that. I wrote for Monday as we're chatting right now. I wrote a piece that was published today on Simone Augustus and kind of how she's adjusting to her time in LA, because one, it's a weird year in general, just with everything going on. But for Simone, it's a new journey for her for the first time in her 14, now soon to be 15 year WNBA career. As you mentioned, she left this offseason to many a very, very surprising move. During the 2019 season, she had mentioned that she told some Lynx fans that the 2020 year was going to be her last year. And that was the assumption that it would happen in Minnesota. And she talked about this a little bit about a few weeks after her decision, or that it got announced that she was going to LA. She went on her Instagram Live account, and her Instagram account went on Instagram Live and started talking about kind of what the decision, she dove into the decision a little bit and what kind of fed into it. And she talked about how big of a surprise it was even for her. She went into the off season kind of like everybody else, just assuming she was going to go back to Minnesota. And like you said, there still are some unknowns, and she hasn't fully opened up about that, whether it's her or the Lynx organization, about what exactly took place. But she hinted at the fact that, negotiations just went so far to one side for her that she kind of, it seemed like, felt a little disrespected and kind of was confused and surprised that, after 14 years that she even had to kind of open the door and look at other teams. She talked about a little bit, she went on to talk about the fact that it was LA, and a lot of fans were like, okay, if you're going to leave that, that's one thing, but to go to LA, like that's a completely other thing. And they thought it was her kind of taking a shot at the organization. And she said that wasn't the case at all, that LA was just, the team that she thought she had the best chance to one, get some playing time, and two, chase after another ring, which is what she ultimately wants. I did dive into it a little bit more in the piece at Zone Coverage. But she also talked as recently as last week, kind of what the adjustment period's been like for her, what the off season's been like for her. And she said, after 14 years, the change is hard for anybody, but especially this year, it's a little odd. And she said the Sparks have been very welcoming for her. Derek Fisher, the head coach of the Sparks, former NBA great, and Lakers point guard, even kind of compared her to Shaq when Shaq was with the Lakers, and Derek was on those teams as well. Just kind of Simone's bubbly personality, her joking personality. And that's something that Lynx fans and the Lynx organization and team, they really liked that throughout the year. And they're going to miss that this year. They're going to miss the morale, the positive morale that she provides to a team. But it was a surprising off season for a lot of reasons, but that was definitely one of the more surprising moves of the off season. And, Simone kind of hinted at the fact that it still might be her last year in 2020. She could still play for another year or two. She's not really sure. I think she'll kind of, make that decision fully at the end of the year. And it might, with being at a neutral site, not having to travel and, having to really move around too much, this might be a nice year for her to put together a few more years in the WNBA. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll be extremely, extremely weird when she takes the floor with the Sparks, playing against the Lynx, starting their first matchups August 9th on ESPN, I believe ESPN2. It'll be weird, but she seems excited about the new journey, and She's I think ready to kind of put everything behind her and move on. But you know, after her career, I have no doubt that she'll mend fences with the organization. Cheryl Reeve has already talked about, you know, retiring Simone's number. I would be incredibly surprised if we saw another player wear Simone's number in a Lynx uniform before her jersey ends up getting retired. So they'll end up kind of mending fences and you know, building up that relationship again. But from a player's perspective, from a Simone the player, not necessarily the person, or beyond her career yet, you know, it's kind of a weird time for both parties, and the fact that they're no longer going to be together going into the new season.
Does Maya Moore ever play for the Lynx or in the WNBA again? What's your gut tell you on that? My gut says yes. I think it could be as soon as next year when they're playing, we'll call it a regular season. They're back in their stadiums and the Lynx are back at Target Center. My gut says yes, she'll be back with the Lynx and it will be sooner rather than later. I'm also not willing to rule out that maybe she returns and she's in a different uniform. Where are you at, and do you have any knowledge of maybe where she's even at this point?
I'm along the same lines as you. I think she'll ultimately return. I don't know if that'll necessarily be next year. I would say if she does return, I would say next year is a very key year to look at. And you know, Cheryl Reeve has talked about in the past that she and the organization have stayed in constant contact with Maya just to kind of see where she's at and kind of give her space at the same time, because she has gone through a lot and she's, you know, she's accomplished a lot of great things off of or away from the basketball court and away from basketball in general. But you know, I would say that in 2021, she would strongly look at coming back. I don't think that the 2020 season was really ever a possibility, especially now, given the circumstances and everything that is going on in society right now. You know, and especially too, she, with her criminal justice, you know, interests and work that she is doing, you know, with this social justice movement and everything that's taking place in the country as well. You know, you wonder if maybe she decides to get involved in that a little bit this year while that topic is on the horizon and kind of on the forefront of everybody's mind right now. So I don't think the 2020 season was ever in the running for Maya or kind of ever really a thought, regardless of the Jonathan Irons case and the results that came out of that in getting him out of prison. But you know, I would say, and if she, you know, if she does return in a Lynx uniform specifically, I would target that 2021 year. And I think this year or this off season will be, we'll learn a lot more about that. But when it comes to Maya returning in general, she's, you know, she's been asked that question a few times of, you know, if she's going to return, if she wants to return, is this it? Is she going to get back to Minnesota? Is she going to be coming back to the WNBA in general? And she hasn't closed the door. I mean, if you would think if she was ready and at a place where she was ready to move on, she would, you know, she would say, I don't have any interest in coming back to basketball, or I think that's kind of unlikely. But she has left the door open. And, you know, especially with staying in contact with Cheryl Reeve and the Lynx organization, that's a positive sign for Minnesota fans and for the organization in Minnesota. So I think, 2021, if we do see Maya Moore back in the next, you know, in the next few years, I would target the next season to be, a very key year in her ultimately returning to the floor.
Your duties for zone coverage also keep you in a normal year at Target Center with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves in this town, look, it's been a rough decade and a half, but their popularity and interest in the Wolves is still incredibly high. We saw it a few years ago when they were able to sneak into the playoffs, even get a win in their playoff series against the Houston Rockets. I want to close with a few quick Timberwolves questions for you. Mm-hmm. I feel like the odds are greater than they're not, if that makes sense, that the Wolves acquire Devin Booker and have their own super team up here in the upper Midwest. Is it wrong to make that assumption, or does it seem to you that there is some legs there? To me, it just seems like it's going to happen. The Suns are the Suns. He probably really doesn't want to be there. There were reports last week that he wasn't happy that the Suns didn't get D'Angelo Russell. Well, the problem pretty much solves itself if he just forces his way to Minneapolis. And to me, one, that's actually really cool that a quote-unquote super team may actually happen in the NBA in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which 5 years ago was unfathomable. But to me, it just seems like the stars have aligned and that it's going to happen. Is that, am I painting too much of a rosy picture?
I think it's definitely a possibility. You know, when it comes to trying to trade for him, there's still a lot that Minnesota would have to give up and what Minnesota would have to do to bring him here. And then that's not even putting into account the fact that they would still have to try and build around those three guys. Obviously that's a problem you're willing to take on if you can get a guy like Devin Booker. But you know, to try and, you know, even let's say this off season, try and trade for him, it would to me just be a lot would need to happen. It would be tough to pull that off. Is that saying that, you know, this couldn't eventually happen, or maybe he, you know, he is a free agent down the road and he decides that Minnesota is where he wants to be. And he sees that, you know, his two friends in Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell are building something special in Minnesota. Would he want to join? That's a little bit of a different story, and that could certainly happen. You know, do I think Devin Booker is going to stay with the Phoenix Suns? I don't think so, just because, like you said, it doesn't seem like that organization is obviously they like Devin Booker and they want to keep him, but they in the last few years they just haven't been very dedicated to surrounding him with the necessary pieces that he needs to try and succeed. And as a young player, that has to be frustrating. And like you said, I think he ultimately tries to make his way out of Phoenix. Whether or not that's in Minnesota, that's definitely an interesting thought. It would bring some level of excitement that maybe like the Jimmy Butler trade or the that time, hopefully a different outcome than the Jimmy Butler situation. But you know, it would definitely bring some excitement. It would pack Target Center, which would be great to see. But I when it comes to a trade for Devin Booker, it would still take a lot for that to happen, like I said. But it certainly is a possibility, and I would never say never when it comes to the power of the players and the weight that they hold in trying to move from team to team.
Final question for you, and thanks for making time for Minnesota Sports Chat. I really do appreciate it. So, some context here. Me, much like anybody else who's followed the Timberwolves in this state, it's been so incredibly long, and I'll use the term relevant. There was some mild relevancy with Jimmy Butler and that squad, even though it flamed out pretty quickly. But for context here, the last time the Timberwolves won a playoff series, I was a junior in high school. I'll be 34 in a few months. I mean, I can't tell you how many life events have happened in the time frame of the Timberwolves last winning a playoff series. So finish this sentence for me. The Minnesota Timberwolves will win their next playoff series when?
They find consistency. I think it boils down to that, not necessarily just or specifically just for the playoffs, but in, you know, regular season in general, they find some consistency because, you know, you branch back beyond, Jimmy Butler, beyond Kevin Love, even those seasons, maybe even going back to the Kevin Garnett days, whether it's head coaches switching in different head coaches throughout the year, or, obviously they had the tragic Flip Saunders situation, which kind of altered the direction of the organization, or players on the court. They haven't had a real consistent group and a consistent team to work with and work around. And that's hard for any organization to navigate towards or navigate through. They have Carl Anthony Towns, who they're dedicated to building around, and D'Angelo Russell, which hopefully would be a consistent core and a consistent group for the next few years. They hope to have a coach for the future in Ryan Saunders right now. He's young. He could be there for a while, which could provide some consistency. Gerson Rosas, they're hoping, to have him around the organization for a long time. So right now they're in a good spot to, consistently have the same pieces for the next few years. And, I think that's what it boils down to is it's hard for any player to, you look at some of these younger guys and they're, they come into the league and they have, three coaches in 4 years or, not just specifically basketball, any sport. That's hard to deal with, and that impacts your play on the court. So, once the Timberwolves can find some consistency and they can, not only just their play on the court, play consistent, but, have some consistent faces and consistent pieces to build around with this organization, I think they could ultimately get back to the postseason and win a division series or a playoff series. But until then, they just have to find consistency. They need to have some pieces in place. And I think they finally do for the first time in a while, feel like they have some pieces to build on in the future, not relying solely on upside and potential, but they have a good mix of potential, but some pieces that they will be able to build that consistency around. So I think that, like I said, I think that's what it all boils down to is just consistency, and hopefully that will lead to putting together some good seasons and put their name back into the postseason run and postseason race and ultimately win a playoff series.
Yeah,
it's funny you said you said you're 34. I think I've actually gotten 34 years older in the last 4 months. that I can relate to that to some extent.
I actually always felt, and I know very good-natured gentleman, but I always felt bad for Jerry Zagoda, who just had to cover 20 and 62 Timberwolves teams for seemingly his entire run with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yeah, I think we've all aged a lot here during COVID and what many have dubbed the COVID winter. It's been incredible. Hopefully it truly is one of these once in a generation things and this never comes back around. That would be incredibly awesome. It's been incredibly awesome, quote unquote, air quoting, meeting you, and I really hope we can do this again down the road. I so appreciate your coverage. I'm a big fan of some, well, not some. Here's what I was trying to say. Some of the guys at Zone Coverage, I know a little bit. Mr. Ekstrom did some stuff at Score North when I was there. And Luke Inman and I actually went to the same high school. So I know some of those guys fairly well. And it's nice to get a chance to, again, quote unquote, meet you. So thanks a ton. Stay safe, stay happy, stay healthy. And let's hope for good things from the Lynx and even good things from the Timberwolves here down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate it for you asking me to join you. And, hopefully we can continue to talk some basketball, continue to have talk sports. And I look forward to joining whenever you'd like me on. I'm always into talking some Lynx basketball, talking T-Wolves basketball, whatever it may be. I'm always down to do so. So I appreciate you inviting me on and having me on here. I had a blast.
Not a problem at all. We will talk again real soon. That is Mitchell Hanson again at @M_Hanson with an E13 on Twitter. You can also follow Zone Coverage at Zone Coverage MN on the Twitter machine. We'll take a break. We'll hear from a couple of great charities in and around the Twin Cities that during COVID here, the Ronald McDonald House, the Red Cross here of the Twin Cities could certainly use your help and support in any which way you can help them, whether that be for the Red Cross, donating blood or volunteering, maybe for the Ronald McDonald House. Maybe you can't make a physical donation at this time. That's fine, but maybe you can help volunteering, or maybe there's other ways. We'll take a quick break. We'll hear from them. We'll come back with Heather Rule. We're going to talk some baseball movies and Twins baseball. We'll do that next right here on Minnesota Sports Chat.
When the world feels like it's falling apart, it's actually coming together. Ronald McDonald House Charities Upper Midwest continues to support families dealing with the child's health crisis. It's the reason we exist, to provide food, shelter, comfort, and love. Because the worst of times brings out the best in us. Support the Ronald McDonald House in our community by making a donation. Visit rmhtwincities.org today.
The need to care for one another has never been greater. And even though our daily lives are different, one fact remains unchanged. Blood is needed every day. You can help save the lives of cancer patients and so many others who depend on blood to heal. If you're in good health, please make an appointment to donate. The American Red Cross adheres to the highest standards of safety and infection control. Visit redcrossblood.org to schedule your appointment now.
Welcome back to Minnesota Sports Chat. I mentioned before the break that I would be joined by Heather Rule. She is on the Twitter machine at HL Rule. Certainly give her a follow. If you watch or read about sports in Minnesota, odds are pretty good you've come across her work either on social media for Major League Baseball, articles for The Athletic, Star Tribune, and much, much more. Heather, this is a Making New Friends edition of Minnesota Sports Chat, so it is nice to, I'll use air quotes because it's only over the phone, but nice to meet you in this capacity. Thanks for making time and thank you for doing this. I think we're going to have a lot of fun here with what we're going to talk about. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to finally connect. I think, you know, there's, especially, you know, during this time, the past 2 months, there's a lot of people you kind of connect with, you know, online, over the phone, social media, that kind of thing. So it's nice to finally connect. I've enjoyed following you on social.
Well, in this new odd world that we're living in right now, I've told people, when I do Zoom calls or Google chats or even just talking with people, it's amazing how giddy I get and the endorphins that start flowing just having human contact and human interaction with people. So this is going to be a ton of fun. I actually want to talk about some baseball movies with you. You've done some, I'll call them, very in-depth commentaries on A League of Their Own and The Rookie. So I want to touch on those with you, but I want to start with, it looks like, if I'm following this correctly, you do, I believe, a yearly IndyCar trip. So walk us through that, because one of my life goals, Heather, that I still have not checked the box, I'd like to see an Indy race and I'd like to see a NASCAR race. And I had thought about trying to basically cross NASCAR off the list this summer. Well, as we know, for obvious reasons, that's not happening. So tell me about your love for IndyCar and your, I think, annual IndyCar trip, because it looked like a lot of fun on social media.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that anyone go see an IndyCar race in person. Obviously, I'm biased as an IndyCar fan growing up, basically since I was a kid. But it's definitely something to take in person. I know people say that about different sports, how things are different on TV and in person. And for IndyCar, you know, auto racing in general, it's the sights and the sounds of the cars in person is just so awesome. TV doesn't do it justice. So I would highly recommend it for sure. But yeah, I've been a fan since I was a kid, which kind of comes from my dad, which is, you know, kind of common in the racing world. It's sort of a generational thing. You see that with the drivers too, how, you know, fathers and sons, you know, race together and it kind of gets passed down, and it sort of happens with race fans as well. So he's been a fan, you know, back when you could listen to the Indy 500 on the radio before it was on TV, and it kind of spilled down to me. And we go to, there's a track in Wisconsin, in Elkhart Lake, just a small, kind of a lake town, really, in, Elkhart Lake. Road America is the track. It's a four-mile road course. So this year in particular, it was, you know, a pretty good spot for social distancing. Plenty of places to go along the track and watch the cars. It's a track that I think this was, so 1990 was the first year that we went over there. As a family, and IndyCar, Kart, you know, they ran there for years. They had a little bit of a gap a few years ago and came back in 2016. But it's kind of our summer tradition, I guess. You know, I like to say, like, so many people in Minnesota have cabins and they go to the lake. And, you know, for us, that was never really our scene, but we would always go to Elkhart Lake and watch the races. So it was a ton of fun. Last weekend when we went, it was, you know, obviously very different with COVID. The IndyCar season has gotten kind of all screwed up like the rest of sports have this year. So they had a couple races and they had actually a doubleheader weekend. So they had, it was kind of a compressed weekend. We usually go Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They have practice sessions and qualifying, but everything was kind of a little different this year just because they really compacted things, and they had a race late Saturday afternoon and then a race on Sunday as well. So it was kind of different that way, but, you know, sort of unique to be able to see the cars in a couple of races like that. You know, it was a little different too, just being at the track and, you know, trying to distance from everyone. And, you know, I think a lot of fans came out. It was the first IndyCar weekend where they allowed fans this year. And they didn't allow, they had the paddock closed, which is kind of a bummer. We always like to walk around, you know, where they're working on the cars and you know, see some drivers there on that kind of thing. But, you know, overall it was a fun weekend. Nice to kind of get away like that, you know, especially this year when not much has been going on. But yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's so much fun.
Years ago, there was a push, I'd say mild push, for Minnesota to maybe build a track and get on the NASCAR circuit. Do you think Minnesota could support either NASCAR or Formula One in the right setting? I personally think they could. If you look at the TV ratings on the weekend, especially for, I guess, more exclusively for NASCAR, this market does fairly well with NASCAR. Do you think motorsports could play off well somewhere here in the Twin Cities or the surrounding area? I know the NHRA drag racing in Brainerd does very well. Do you think Minnesota, the Twin Cities specifically, could support it on a high level if we ever got to that point?
That's a really good question. I think the interest would be there. And, you know, with Brainerd, I don't know as much of kind of the details around that track. I know there's been some changes to it over the years. But I think, you know, what they tried to do up there was maybe a little similar to what they did in Road America, where it's, you know, Elkhart Lake is, I think the sense, it's like less than 1,000 people, and it's sort of, you know, an area where people come up maybe from like Chicago, say, and, you know, that's kind of their cabin area or their lake place. So it's sort of a little, you know, resort area in town, and there's a race track there. And I think Brainerd maybe was, you know, kind of a similar feel with that. And that just didn't take off. With the Twin Cities though, it's interesting because in, what was it, the mid-90s, I think they had a couple of years where they ran a Trans Am race on the streets of downtown Minneapolis.
Yeah, I remember this.
Which, yeah, that was, we went to both of those. And now, just to think about it now, it's just, I feel like that would, it's something that would never happen now. And obviously that was before like the light rail and all that. But yeah, I remember going down there and by the old Star Tribune building and, you know, they set up grandstands downtown and just able to see the race cars on the streets of downtown was really cool. And, you know, street courses are, you know, there's one in Long Beach, California, that IndyCar runs. It's kind of been a longstanding track. And those are definitely fun too, like similar to road courses for me. It's just, you know, more than the typical oval. But I think the interest would be there. I think it might be more of a logistical thing. Like, okay, where would they put a track? Would it be, you know, would the area be able to kind of support it, that kind of thing. But, you know, that's, yeah, I'm not sure. And then, you know, to go either NASCAR or IndyCar, I think would be interesting to find out. You know, I lean more toward IndyCar and kind of sports car racing. So obviously I think that would be really cool to see that here. The closest, so other than Elkhart Lake, that IndyCar just ran this past weekend, there's a short oval in Iowa. I think maybe, you know, a few hours away from here, which is the other closest track. So I think there's potential. I guess I haven't really thought about that too much before.
Well, maybe that could be our big venture together, Heather. Let's form the committee. Let's find the people. Let's find the finances. You know, everybody always wants to build things in Arden Hills. Arden Hills is always like the first thing that gets thrown out there for any stadium. It seems to me that's always the plan they give to actually end up where they want to be. But maybe we'll finally bring something to Arden Hills. Let's segue, if you don't mind. One of the things that you've been doing, and I've been reading them, and it's been really fun, is you have a blog spot, and I believe it's thoughtsfromthestands.blogspot.com. Again, thoughtsfromthestands.blogspot.com. One of your many ventures, and this one's been particularly of interest to me because it's kind of right up my alley with baseball movies and sports movies. The two particular that you've really done a deep dive on are 1992's A League of Their Own, which is a movie I think for most of us, if you're a sports fan and a baseball fan, it's on TV a lot, and you'll almost always get sucked into watching it, and I mean that in a good way. And then also The Rookie with Dennis Quaid. What is it about these two movies that prompted you to do really almost a scene-by-scene deep dive of the movie?
Well, the first one, A League of Their Own, that is, like, if we're just talking about these two movies, that by far is my favorite. I think it's probably, like, take the sports and baseball tag, you know, aside, it's probably one of my favorite movies ever. And just this spring, as I was kind of figuring out what to do with my time, like I'm sure a lot of people in sports were doing, you know, I sat down and I was thinking, okay, you know, I haven't written anything in a while. You know, what's something I can do to kind of keep writing? And obviously there's no sports going on, which is what I normally write about. And A League of Their Own was on TV a lot. Like it goes through cycles sometimes on the different channels. And, you know, I kept seeing it on TV. And for some reason, you know, I just felt like I was just getting into it so much more. Like I was just really enjoying the fact that the movie was on and just taking so much more enjoyment in it than maybe I had before, which I think part of it was because, you know, normally I'd be watching baseball every day and that wasn't happening. So I decided, well, you know, what if I were to write something about this? You know, it's a movie I've seen so many times and know so many of the lines and scenes anyway. I thought, well, why don't I, you know, I have old school, I have the DVD. Why don't I, you know, put that in and maybe, you know, maybe take some notes and kind of figure out, yeah, what I could write about, make sure I get some of the quotes right, that kind of thing. And then as I got going, I was like, well, this could turn into quite the little project here. I knew obviously it was going to be longer than like one blog post. But I just kind of kept writing and it, you know, then once I was splitting it up, I'm like, well, I can't have like a 5,000 word blog post. I've got to manage it here. So it ended up being 14 parts, but I think that kind of worked out well too. It kind of keeps things short. And, it was one of those, I wrote everything first and then kind of released a new part each day. So it was just kind of something that is to keep me busy. And, you know, it's a movie I really, really enjoy. It's a very quotable movie. It's based on a true story, which is, I think, really cool. And I just think that movie in particular is so well done. You know, a lot of times you'll get movies based on a true story and you kind of think, oh, it's kind of cheesy or, you know, it's not that great. But I really just love the movie and had a lot of fun kind of writing about it and kind of interspersing just my commentary and kind of questions like as I'm watching versus kind of a recap and just a summary of what was going on. It's interesting too, as I was kind of looking around on YouTube for different clips and things. I actually found the trailer for the movie and
I watched that this morning.
I don't think it's a very good I don't like the trailer at all. I think
it doesn't tell you anything about the movie for the most part. I mean, it tells you It tells you what you would know just by basically the name.
Right. Yeah. And I just thought, wow, this is the trailer. You know, so I feel like it's one of those things where, geez, you know, everyone kind of gets to love the movie by watching it. And you know, probably the only good thing about the trailer is it did have the line, you know, there's no crying in baseball. It did have that in the trailer. But, you know, yeah, I'm like, man, if people were watching this movie after the trailer, that's really weird. But yeah, the other thing I wanted to do too is I didn't do, like, because both of these movies are based on true stories, and I didn't want to necessarily get caught up in too much like research as to, okay, what really happened that was in the movie and what didn't happen and that kind of thing. So like with A League of Their Own, there were some things I knew about just from reading different stories over the years, but you know, I kind of wanted to leave some of that, I think, especially with The Rookie, up for interpretation too. Like, oh, well, you know, this seems like a sort of a too good to be true story. I wonder if they just threw this in like for the movie, cause it's kind of dramatic or whatever. So I kind of wanted to keep it as commentary and, you know, make sure I was kind of telling the story, but also throwing in, you know, my different opinions and kind of asking questions and that kind of thing. So yeah, that kind of gives you a good summary, I guess, as to, you know, where I was at and what I wanted to do with these.
Well, here's what I love about these two movies specifically, and you alluded to this in talking about A League of Their Own. Obviously, they're both based on true stories. Yes, it's Hollywood. Each movie's going to take its liberties, but A League of Their Own, what I loved is you still got the human element of a country at war. And then in The Rookie, you get the human element of a guy trying to, very similar to, Field of Dreams. Very similar to Field of Dreams. You have a guy trying to raise a family, trying to make ends meet, and he has this call back to baseball. And I think it's, to me, it's the human element where we can all kind of envision ourselves in these scenarios, which at least in my opinion makes these movies incredibly watchable and enjoyable. And yeah, it helps that, first off, the star power, maybe not as well known in 1992 for A League of Their Own as it is now, but I mean, you look at Tom Hanks, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, John Lovitz, I believe, correct? He plays the scout. So think about that. And then you have Dennis Quaid in The Rookie. I mean, it's just all... It's very well done, and it kind of touches at that core of dealing with life and everything that goes with the ups and downs of life. And that's what I loved about both of these movies.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think especially with A League of Their Own, when you're kind of looking at the casting and who's in that movie, you know, first of all, John Lovitz, you know, one of the things I realized as I was writing was, you know, his part of the movie isn't that much. You know, it's in the beginning. He's the scout. He comes in and gets the players, and then he's pretty much done. But his character, I mean, like, almost everything he says is so quotable and so memorable, and he has this, you know, kind of sarcastic, you know, wit about him. I mean, it's just, so pretty much anything he said, I was quoting, you know, so that was kind of fun. And then what I liked about what they did with the characters is, I feel like sometimes in sports movies or any movies, I guess, where you have kind of a bigger group, you know, cast of characters, or, you know, especially with teams, you know, there might be one or two, three people that you maybe really focus on for kind of the speaking roles and their backstories. And then there's just kind of the rest of the team, and they're just, you know, kind of there as extras, sort of. But with A League of Their Own, you felt like you got to know kind of all the different personalities of a lot of those players, or, you know, the actresses. And, you know, with Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna, I mean, they could have easily made that about the two sisters in the story, as have that as the story, which obviously that was a big driver for the movie. But even just, you know, one-liners and different scenes from some of the other players, you've got a feel for their characters. You know, there's the one who's from Saskatchewan, and so you know, she didn't have that many lines either, but you kind of got the feeling that, yeah, you know, she's from Canada, and she's here to play baseball. She's not looking forward to going back for the winter, that kind of thing. And, you know, there's Evelyn, she had her son with that traveled with them, and so you got to know these other characters, which I thought was really cool, because it wasn't just, oh, you know, here's these these two sisters on the team, and that's all we're really going to focus on. So I think that was really cool. With the rookie, Dennis Quaid, I think did a really good job. You could kind of see just how he played that as the family man. And really the whole time, he's just kind of unsure about, well, should I really do this baseball thing again? But I think you're right with that human element of, you know, that's what makes these things relatable. And I think, yeah, both these movies did a great job of kind of encompassing that and getting to know the characters really well.
A part of what made The Rookie to me such a beautiful sports movie, if I guess that's the term that I'll dub it, is you get to see kind of what it's like for those who haven't, what it's like to be in a clubhouse. You get a little bit of the Hollywood version of it, but basically here you essentially have somebody who's my age in their mid-30s showing up to play with a bunch of guys in their early 20s, and they have some fun with that. I think at one point, Jimmy Morris, Dennis Quaid's character, calls himself, you know, the old guy, or I'm the old man. You know, that stuff to me is fun to see, and that stuff, for the most part, doing a tiny bit of research, is that's true. That's exactly what he was up against when he showed up to a double-A clubhouse, and he was easily a decade to a decade and a half older than everybody else he was playing with.
Yeah, for sure. He, you know, and I think he did a really good job of playing that part really, really well, as far as even just sitting on the bus and getting up, you know, on those long bus trips, those road trips that they had, and just stretching on his arm and just looking just completely spent and so tired, you know, because obviously it's something the younger guys can maybe deal with a little better because they're, you know, they're younger, don't get tired as easily, that kind of thing. But for him, kind of that road life, I think they really did a good job of showing how draining that was for him, you know, physically, but emotionally as well, because he had, you know, the phone calls back to his wife and his family. You know, he was helping his son with his homework over the phone, doing timetables. And, you know, this was in what I think it was supposed to be like in the late 90s. So obviously, you know, he's at a payphone at the motel and all his teammates are waiting and they're thinking he's in there talking to his girl or something. And he's like, well, I was helping my son with his homework. You know, so that just shows you too kind of the differences that he has a family, and that very much was weighing on his mind, you know, at least in the movie for sure, just that he had that back at home and what if this doesn't work out. You know, he at one point in the movie kind of contemplates, says, hey, you know what, this isn't working out for me. I'm not getting called up. I'm just, you know, sitting here in the minors again, which is, I think, what happened his first go round with the real Jimmy Morris. I don't think he made it past like single A ball or something. And, you know, then we kind of see in the movie, he gets his passion back a little bit. He sees the Little League game going on, and you can kind of see that he's excited about the sport. He's like, okay, let's give this another go. And he kind of gets inspired, pitch as well, and gets the call up.
The real Jim Morris ended up appearing in parts of two seasons for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time in 1999 and 2000. Quick turnaround by Hollywood, because the release date, or at least the release year of The Rookie, was in 2002. Heather, I want to shift gears a little bit back to A League of Their Own, or at least the premise of The League of Their Own. Do you envision a day in this country, or maybe somewhere around the world in another country, where a women's professional baseball league or even softball league could be as viewed and maybe as covered as, say, the WNBA is here in America? Do you think that is possible at some point, that we could see that? I do, but I don't know how close it is. But when I see the success of the WNBA, and the WNBA out of the gate, yeah, they were propped up by the NBA and they weren't profitable, but they've been profitable in recent memory, at least a few years now. They've made money. And the league has tremendous exposure, and it's only getting better year by year. Do you see a day where we could have a professional, I guess maybe it would be softball. Do you think there could be a professional softball league or baseball that could get some coverage here in this country?
That's another really good question. I hope so. I think, you know, what happened with A League of Their Own, and, you know, that professional girls baseball league, which I always thought was funny that they called it girls and not women's, but I think that was maybe more of a sign of the times too. But just, it was sort of this thing that, you know, they did at the time because, well, all the guys are at war, so we need you women to sort of fill in a way. And, you know, I would hope that we wouldn't be done with that. Like, it's not like a closed chapter, that as sports evolve, you know, I cover the Minnesota Whitecaps in the National Women's Hockey League, and to see that league kind of grow too over the years. I mean, and it takes time too. It's not, I think sometimes people think, oh, well, overnight, like, this needs to just kind of go from 0 to 60 and be a full league and, you know, kind of be on an even playing field as men's sports. And I think it takes time. I mean, it's definitely something that I think should be explored. You know, I think it would be really fun as we keep going through time and as we keep making those strides toward a little more equality with kind of men and women athletics. I'd love to see, you know, baseball, softball, you know, whatever it would be for women kind of become a professional league and something more than just the Olympics, I guess. You know, there's so many sports and individual sports that are kind of just, you know, at the Olympics, that's kind of the pinnacle. And I think to have something a little more sustainable, you know, every year in a professional league would be really cool. You know, I'd love to see something, even starting out small, like, you know, WHL has, you know, five to now six, they have a new team, six teams. And so even starting out small, just to have something in place to build upon, I think would be really great.
Well, we need the four, we'll call it, or I guess five major men's sports to step up in this town, because the Lynx have won four WNBA championships. The Whitecaps are league champions. The St. Paul Saints are coming off of an American Association championship. We need the Loons, Wild, Timberwolves, Vikings, and Twins to step up. Maybe it'll be this year. And I'll transition into maybe one Twins question for you here in closing. And again, thank you so much for the time. Heather, can the Twins win the World Series this year just from where you're sitting? Do you feel like this could be a World Series contending team? I actually do. I was talking with good friend Manny Hill via phone yesterday, and he's been a guest on this pod out of the gate a few times. I don't think the Twins have super incredibly dominant pitching, but I think it's better than it has been. And I think maybe Jose Berríos only having to go through a total of 4 months to get through a World Series could benefit the Twins. And we all know the lineup is incredibly powerful, even if they are to lose a guy or two throughout the year. Do you envision a day later this fall where the Minnesota Twins could be World Series champions?
I do, yes.
Yes.
let's just go with the optimism. Why not?
We need it. Let's be positive. Tell me why, yeah, it'll happen.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of reasons where I can, you know, backtrack and say, well, but I mean, it's tough because I always, you know, I mean, this year on paper, like, I feel like it's the biggest wild card ever because you still have the pandemic going on.
Yeah, so nobody knows.
I feel like it's just because everything is, you know, there's that whole cliche about, well, that's why they play the games and, you know, they don't play on paper and all that stuff. But I feel like this year, I mean, not only do you have whatever injuries might happen to players, you have the pandemic going on. So who knows what's going to happen with that. So, but I also think it would be very, it would be very Minnesota sport to have the Minnesota team win the World Series this year.
Because I think I heard
it was you were talking with Brandon Warren, I think, and you guys were talking about, well, so if the Twins win the World Series, like, we're going to celebrate, it's going to be awesome, but, like, everyone else, you know, all the other teams, oh, well, yeah, but there's this big asterisk. You didn't really win the full season.
I truly believe that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's a great way to look at it. I think it's so true, especially for the Twins if they were to do it.
Well, what if the Dodgers were to finally break through and win the World Series? I mean, the same thing applies to them, right? They'd finally get their coveted World Series championship, right. And I think a lot of us would look at it and go, we'll do it in a full season and get back to us.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's probably risk for, any team that, that's going to happen, unless maybe the Yankees, because, the Yankees are just dominant. But kind of getting back to why it's going to happen for the Twins, I mean, I think you look at last year and you see all their wins, all the home runs. That was such a fun season to cover. I tell people, because I started in 2015, and so I sat through 2016 with the, over 100 losses, and sitting through that, and then last year, it was just night and day. So much fun to cover last year, all the home runs and just the milestones and the records that were falling, later in the season, kind of on a daily basis. And to have most of those pieces back, basically, this year, and then to add some of that pitching depth, I think you're right. I think everyone kind of agrees that there's, the lineup is super strong, pitching, not necessarily dominant, I guess, but a lot of good pieces were added there too. And everyone should be fairly healthy in the rotation. Pineda has the suspension still, but just, Berríos, Odorizzi, and then you add guys in, Jose Bailey, Rich Hill, Maeda. I think they have all the pieces there. And especially when you look at the 60-game season then, playing teams in the AL Central, which has been kind of weak, the past few years. The White Sox, I think, got a lot better. So they're going to be, contenders, I think, over the next 3 years. The Indians are still decent. But I think, it's to the Twins' benefit to be playing the Central. And, you don't have to play teams like the Yankees and in the regular season, although the regular season hasn't been an issue. But, I think the schedule benefits them. I think the fact that they have a solid roster, and then adding guys like Donaldson too. Can't forget to mention him. That pickup over the offseason was amazing. And still having, guys like Nelson Cruz around, who had just an amazing year last year. And, seeing everybody with the home run totals, and, I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic and hopeful, which is why, early on this spring, it was almost something I didn't want to think about too much. The fact that, we didn't even know if there was going to be baseball at all this year. I think a lot of us probably thought it just wasn't going to happen at all. And that's what was so hard to realize, that they set everything up, to kind of this win now and have this great season, and to have it, shortened, taken away, whatever, with the pandemic. It's just, it is kind of a bummer. I mean, obviously, no question, shutting things down and for the safety of everyone is totally the right call. But if you look at it from that baseball perspective, it is kind of a bummer to think about how they didn't get to do the 162-game season.
I think one of the things I'm looking forward to the most when it comes to the Twins is, I actually heard an interview, I'll give a hat tip to Chad Hartman. Chad Hartman on WCCO, he had Jake Odorizzi on. I don't know if Odo is a weekly guest with Chad or if this just happened to be a random interview that he had. But Jake had mentioned he thinks that Byron Buxton is the most important player to the Minnesota Twins, just because when he's healthy, he makes everything better. He makes the lineup more explosive. Obviously, what he does on the base paths, the runs that he saves in the outfield. I actually thought about it the other way. It's funny that I heard Jake saying that. I actually think Jake's the most important person to the Minnesota Twins. If he can be that number two, borderline number one he was for the first half last season, and finish with a great season, earning him that qualifying contract of, I think, $15 to $17 million? I don't remember exactly. If he can be that guy and continue an upward trajectory, I think that's great for the Minnesota Twins. And if you can have him and Berríos firing on all cylinders for 2-3 months, I think it's game on when it comes to if the Twins actually could win a World Series. Heather, I want to close with this, kind of where we spent the bulk of our time. Baseball movies. Are you willing to tell me on this podcast, is there a baseball movie you're ashamed to admit you still haven't seen?
Yeah, probably like most of them, most of the other classics that people would consider awesome. I've seen Field of Dreams, I think, once.
Okay.
When I was in high school.
Well, you don't have to out yourself on all of them. You know, just even one if you want to save face.
I mean, I think Field of Dreams, we were on a trip to Chicago with my choir in high school, and so we watched it on the bus. So I don't really consider that necessarily like viewing it and really kind of remembering everything about it and the lines and all that. So I would say probably Field of Dreams. But I've seen Angels in the Outfield like a million times. So
yeah, perfect.
That's kind of the embarrassing, slide the other way, I guess.
You know what?
I've seen that, but...
You don't have to hop in on this one at all, but I'm not anti-Star Wars. I never have been. I just don't go crazy for it like a lot of people. I can't tell you how many Star Wars movies I'm behind at this point. So you really don't have anything to feel bad about. But I would say when you decide to watch one for the first time, or maybe it's Field of Dreams, I'd love to see a commentary on it because I've enjoyed the commentaries on A League of Their Own and The Rookie, and I encourage people to check it out. So maybe when baseball season's done, we've had the social distance World Series parade for the Minnesota Twins, we've had the social distance Stanley Cup parade for the Minnesota Wild, and we're all at home maybe New Year's Day watching the Gophers in the Rose Bowl with no fans. Once all of that's passed, maybe you can do a commentary on the Field of Dreams.
I would definitely do. I love your optimism too. That's so great.
I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to be positive.
Yeah. No, I would do that. I think Major League is probably another one that I would like to do, but that's one that I've seen bits and pieces of, but it's been on like cable TV. So I'm not getting the full effect I believe it's rated R and there's a lot of profanity and stuff. So I would need to,
you kind of need
the unedited version.
Yeah. You kind of need the real thing. It's like ice cream. If you're going to eat ice cream, eat the real stuff. Why would you eat sugar free or fat free? You're eating ice cream. Just eat the real stuff. All right,
exactly.
Heather, I think we'll leave it there, but I want to catch up again with you down the road, okay?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for having me on, and I love to see all the stuff that you're doing with, with your podcast and everything you're doing on social right now.
Hire Ross 2020. I don't know if it's going to take two more weeks or two more years. Well, hopefully it doesn't, because then we'll have to change the year of the hashtag, but I'm confident it'll happen, and I'm very appreciative of your support. So thanks a ton, and I encourage people to check out thoughtsfromthestands.blogspot.com, which they can just find on your Twitter at HLRule, and I'm glad you made it back safe and sound from your IndyCar weekend. So thank you very much, Heather. We'll talk again real soon, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Wonderful. That, again, the voice of Heather Rule. Talking primarily baseball movies today. We talked A League of Their Own and The Rookie and some other topics as well. My thanks to her. Also, my thanks to Mitchell Hansen as well, who joined us in the first segment to talk about the Minnesota Lynx and the Minnesota Timberwolves. A couple of quick news and notes on the way out the door. J.D. Spielman, Rick Spielman's son, former Nebraska Cornhusker, he is not coming to the University of Minnesota. He has chosen TCU, Texas Christian University. At some point, I'll corral James Murphy, Daniel House. We'll have a Score North Gophers show reunion on Minnesota Sports Chat. I want to do that when we have a bit more of a clear picture on what is or is not going to happen with college football. But again, J.D. Spielman, he's not going to row the boat. He's going to head to TCU. And very quickly on the way out the door, the 3M Open is this upcoming weekend in Blaine. Last year's champion, Matt Wolf, he is in the field. The 3M is his only tournament victory. However, he's only 21 years old. So what have you done with your life lately? I'm going to go ahead and give you two names. I'm going to pick either Tommy Fleetwood or Harry Higgs. Not because they're great golfers, although Tommy Fleetwood's pretty good. I just think they have the two best names in the field. So I'm going to go with Tommy Fleetwood or Harry Higgs. And be on the lookout. I'm meeting up with Manny Hill later this week for some social distance get-togethers. Maybe we'll do a quick Minnesota sports chat then. Again, my thanks to Heather Rule and my thanks to Mitchell Hansen for joining this edition of Minnesota Sports Chat. I'm Ross Brendel. We'll talk again real soon.